welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio.
4-2 pitch, swing and a miss, knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable 2014 College Football Week 4 show, brought to you by www.southbeachshopping.com, the online shopping network of Philly Press Box Radio College Football Network. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partners, college football national expert Terry House and Penn State and Big Ten expert in the tackle on the 1994 Penn State offense, considered by many as the greatest offense in the history of college football. The Goon, Keith Conlon. Welcome back, gentlemen.
Hey, Bill, what's going on? Good to be with you, brother.
What's up, Billy? How are you doing, man? How was the trip last week?
Oh, it was fantastic. We spent the weekend, we flew into Pittsburgh and ended up, your favorite city, actually, Keith, come to think of it.
Yeah.
We did, me and a buddy, we flew in and we met the rest of the guys a little later, but we had to have a Primanti sandwich when we got there. So we started off with that. We ended up getting some complimentary tickets to the Pirates-Brewers game at PNC Park on Friday night, and we were three rows from the field. That was nice. And left and went and got something to eat at a real nice restaurant, and in the morning, we went down to Morgantown and spent the day down there. We were in the press box and on the field. We hit a few tailgates that our friends knew. And, Keith, they were drinking something out of mason jars that I'm not exactly sure what it looked like, but something along the lines of seawater, kind of. But they said it tasted like apple, and it was homemade moonshine.
Oh, boy. The old apple pie. Very good.
The old apple pie. Yeah, I wasn't sure,
buddy.
Like I say, what it. I had to ask because the mason jars were a dead giveaway.
Yeah, and you woke up blind, so you had to know what it was then.
Well, I didn't touch it. I just watched it.
Okay.
But I did have an opportunity on the field before the game. I got to meet Coach Stoops, Bob Stoops. I also got to meet Mike Stoops down there. We watched the warm-ups from the field. Got to spend about 20 minutes talking to our buddy Scrap, Tom Bradley, and he is doing great. And it was great to see him, great to catch up a little bit, and I really enjoyed talking to him. And he's resettled, I guess is the right word, back in coaching and doing what he loves to do, working with kids. And he's coaching the D-line down there and really seems to be enjoying himself. So, saw a good game. The Sooners are loaded. They're an awful good football team. The freshman, true freshman, ran for 242 yards in that game. And we were commenting on the way back to the hotels. Imagine just this time last year, high school kids were trying to tackle him. And he was a beast.
Yeah.
So we saw a great game. Flew back Sunday morning just in time to hit the local establishment down here to watch the Eagles. So we had a great weekend all around.
Yeah, that was a great weekend.
It was. It was short and sweet, but we tried to fill every minute of it as we could. We didn't get a whole lot of sleep. They were more like naps than sleep. So, but we caught up and we're good to go. And heck, we got another week of college football coming up and nothing better than that. So
there you go.
Our www.southbeachshopping phone lines will be open at 929-477-2855. So feel free to call throughout the show. All opinions are welcome, but please be respectful of other people's opinions. Again, for those that might want to offer a comment but don't want to call, go to the Philly Press Box Facebook page and send a personal message, and we'll do our best to get your comment or question on the show. All right. Well, Keith, we're going to start with you. Let's get right to it. Let's talk about Penn State. Not a not a great performance by the Nittany Lions, but plenty more than they needed against a completely overmatched UMass team in a 48-7 win. And I wanted to point out that we've talked about this each week, and I guess it just needs to keep being talked about. The Nittany Lions are now ranked 108th in the nation in rushing yards. But with that said, they're sixth in the nation in points against, with 11 points a game. I think if you were sitting here at the beginning of the year and said, hey, we're going to be 4-0, we've got a great chance of winning this week against Northwestern, we're going to be 5-0 going to Ann Arbor, I think everybody would have to be happy with that. What do you think?
Completely agree. I mean, who would not be happy right now? We're sitting at 4-0. You know, again, it goes back to what we talk about every week, and that's the offensive line up front, and people were worried about going into the season, and we're still worried about it now going into week five. It is a major concern. It was nice to have a semi-off game, as in, you know, you're not playing against the best competition, so you didn't have all your horses running out there the whole game. You didn't have Hackenberg playing four straight quarters, and I thought that they rotated a lot of guys through. Can't complain about the effort. The defense is playing great. You know, every week we start off talking about Hackenberg, but I'm telling you, this defense is something special. It's doing something out there that you've not seen in Penn State in a long time. Not a long time, but in a few years. You know, they're dominating up front. They're active in the secondary. They're active at linebacker. So everything's going all right. Everything's going great for these guys right now, but they have not been tested. I mean, they've been tested late in the games against like Florida and against Rutgers, and, you know, they Hackenberg it. They hacked it, you know. I mean, they got it done. It was pretty much on him. Are they going out and winning all these games and dominating these games? No, but you got to give this team has a heart, they have a pulse, and they're 4-0 going into the game, a very winnable game this weekend, and could be going into a bye week at 5-0. I mean, would you have thought this?
Well, we know Terry didn't because he picked Rutgers, but the UCF and the Rutgers games, you know, I think those were formidable opponents with solid defenses. So I think it would have been very easy to say that they could have lost one or maybe both of those games.
Yeah, no doubt. Terry, what do you think, buddy?
Terry, what are you thinking?
Well, first and foremost, obviously, Keith, great job. He always does. I think it's just wonderful that we get to hear Keith talk about this, you know, from his perspective, being a former Nittany Lion. So I always get – it's like a treat for me just to hear him talk about it. So I always appreciate that. And Bill being such a Penn State enthusiast, it's always great to hear his thoughts on that. And you guys are both so connected, so – first and foremost, I just wanted to say I appreciate, you know, all that you guys bring to the table with this because it's always a treat for me. But anyway, I hate these games. I hate these games when Penn State and not just Penn State, but any Big Ten school, SEC school, you know, when the SEC schools play the Georgia Southerns of the world and, you know, we got all these MAC games with some of these Big Ten teams and every conference does it. I get that. But I just get so frustrated. I think for college football fans, for anybody that's involved in this game, I mean, we lose out. I mean, you know, I guess the only people, the only group of people that don't lose out is UMass because they cash a check. So, I mean, I guess they appreciate that. But, you know, we really didn't learn anything new about Penn State. And as Keith said, they're cycling guys in there. This was really about getting out of there, staying healthy, and looking forward to the Big Ten schedule. So the defense, once again, was great. They dominated the line of scrimmage. I think UMass had 3 yards rushing. I mean, that's just ridiculous. And only 266 total yards. As you guys pointed out, the defense is really a good group. And I think it's going to be interesting to see them as we move forward because, you know, they are going to be matched up against some teams that will have some personnel in the trenches that can most certainly at least – you know, match up more competitively with them. So, as you guys mentioned, the first four games, it's great for Penn State to be 4-0. Talk about the momentum on the recruiting front. We talked about Franklin and his ability to get the most out of his teams in past shows. And, you know, Penn State, they look really good. We've talked about Hackenberg, you know, so many times and how great he is. And he is great. And the wide receivers look tremendous. But this wasn't really a game, you know, at the end of the day for us to learn anything new about what Penn State is and what they aren't. As Keith mentioned, the offensive line continues to be an issue. And, you know, they have to be the catalyst for that run game. As Bill mentioned, they were up 9 spots from last week in terms of rushing in Division I football. So, That's a positive. They're moving in a positive direction on that front. I'm looking forward to the next couple of weeks because I think we're going to really learn about Penn State. We're going to learn, where they're at. As you guys both mentioned about Rutgers and UCF, there's a really good chance that they could have lost those games, and you could even argue that they probably should have lost those games. With Rutgers turning the ball over five times, I mean, if you turn the ball over five times against a good quality team like Penn State, you're not going to win many games. So, they easily could be 2-2, but they're 4-0, and that's a good thing. And there's a lot of really, good positives. I've been saying, most of this year so far that, Penn State most certainly, in my mind, is a year or two away from really being, one of those teams that everybody has to look at and think that, they're a true player, not only for the Big Ten, but even for the playoff. I think very shortly Penn State fans are going to be very excited about what's going on here. And we're talking about big things. We're talking about the playoff, not just the Big Ten championship. So, but this year they are, there's five or so games that I think are going to be really competitive. It starts with Northwestern this week. Northwestern is not a very good football team. They've really struggled out of the gate. They're 1-2 with all three games being played at home. They opened up with Cal out of the Pac-12, who's really struggled last year. They're a little bit better. They're improved, but you can't lose to Cal at home to open the season. And then they played Northern Illinois the second week, and Northern Illinois beat them as well. And then this past week, I think it was Western Michigan, and I think they were outgained by 100 yards. They won the game 24-7, but, just not very explosive. They're not able to run the football. They lost Vendrick Mark right before the season, so that really affects their ability to be dynamic in the run game. And also they utilized him in the pass game so much. So I really don't see Penn State having a lot of trouble in this game. I think they're better in the trenches. They're better on both lines of scrimmage. I think they have more athletes. I think Penn State will get after it. I don't think they're going to look ahead to next week. I think they'll be focused. I think Franklin does a really good job of doing that. I see Penn State coming out and just controlling the line of scrimmage. I think we'll see the offensive line play better this week. I really do. I think going into week five, I think we're going to see a little bit of progress. They're not great up front, but I think they'll gel a little bit more, and I have a feeling that they'll run the ball a little bit more effectively. Northwestern's been pretty good against the run so far, but I do look for Penn State to control the line of scrimmage, and I think Hackenberg will play well, and I feel Penn State will walk out of there 5-0, and I think they win the game something like 27-7 or 27-10.
Not bad. One update on the offensive line. You got Derek Dowry back in there, number 53, playing at guard. He was one of the two guys coming over from defense to play on the offensive line who tore his wrist up pretty good in the I believe it was the preseason. So he was listed as the starter going into the season, but then got hurt in camp.
Yep.
So I think getting a guy like that in there, I think they're struggling more on the inside than they are on the outside. The outside guys, Nelson and Smith, are playing great. Again, I said it last week. You don't hear an offensive tackle's name. He's doing a good job.
Right.
Obviously playing a pretty good job out there, playing right tackle as a redshirt freshman. And you get a guy like Dowry coming in who can spell both guards, possibly jump in at center where somebody else can jump in at center. Get these guys some rest and get the guys going 1,000 miles an hour out there. And
right.
I think you'll see him playing more this week. He did play some last week. He actually played very well, in my opinion. So it's not a bad thing. Now they're going to actually start developing some depth at the offensive line position.
Yeah, absolutely. And Keith,
Let me ask you this. We've talked about this, over and over. But is it possible? We're so used to great tailbacks and great running games at Penn State. Is it possible that Belton, Lynch, and Zwinnick are just not that good? They're not the type of running backs we've been seeing for the last 40 years come out of Penn State. That maybe it's a combination of not having great running backs, having average running backs and having average line, and you're getting what you get at this point in the season,
the three-headed monster is it's pretty good out there. Lynch and Belton are big scat back types, and you had the Bruiser coming in there. That would be the only difference in the blocking scheme. Maybe you have to stay on block a millisecond more with a guy named Zwinnick going through the line because he is a little bit bigger and a little bit slower. But, I don't see those guys as not great tailbacks because I believe that they all are. They have struggled up front at the point of contact and staying on their blocks. That's their thing. They're getting to places. They're not making mistakes like they were the first 2 weeks. So it's getting better. You get a hat on a hat is all you're asking for as an offensive lineman. running back can make you look great. He can make you look very poor. I don't think we have a problem with our running backs making our offensive line look bad. I think that, you know, we whiffed a couple times in the first few weeks. We got exploited a little bit by some pretty good players. And, again, they are improving. That's all you're asking for. You don't want the mental breakdowns. I don't think they're having many more mental breakdowns than they had the first 2 weeks. So they're not getting out, man. They're getting out there. They just need to get better and more. And it starts with the confidence. As an offensive lineman, it's 100% confidence. If you have confidence in knowing what you're doing, you know who you're blocking when you get up on that line of scrimmage, you can go 1,000 miles an hour. If you're going to make a mistake, do it 1,000 miles an hour. Don't do it slow. Don't be, stuttering around out there not knowing what you're doing because you're going to get humiliated. So I think that the confidence is getting there, and literally as an offensive lineman, that's, I would say personally, half the battle is confidence when you're playing in the offensive line.
Yeah,
and I guess really if you're on the coaching staff, and you have only one returning starter, you can say, okay, if we can start to get a lot better, like you're saying, and really start to peak around week six or week seven, as you're looking at the schedule, well, that's Michigan and Ohio State. You know, if we could really start to get it together by that point, hey, we knock those teams off. You have Maryland, Indiana, Temple, Illinois, and Michigan State behind it. Hey, we got a chance to be really good here. And, as fans, obviously, we want success right now, and we want to be great every week. But the truth being, it's not that way. And as you say, Keith, if they can continue to grow and, get another game behind them, another week of practice behind them with the bye week, and get it together for Michigan, another week off after that, you're talking about having almost 10 weeks behind you before you have to face Ohio State.
It's crazy, but that's the way some people are looking at going into the season, and it's crazy, but that's how it's working out right now.
Yep.
Great, let's not kid ourselves. We got three teams right now, or four teams, that we knew we had chances to beat, and then, we're going into week five and then against Northwestern team, who some suspected were going to be a lot better than they actually are playing, and they're not. Then you go into Michigan. I mean, I know we don't want to look ahead, but I mean, there's a team on the hot seat right now. Not just the coach. I'm talking about the whole team out there. It's in turmoil out there. So who's to think that we're not going to go up to Ohio State at home in a whiteout at 8 o'clock at night on October 25th, being 7-0, 6-0. Well, yeah, 6-0. It's a heavy possibility of that happening.
Absolutely. And you never know, Michigan, we'll talk about them a little later, but, they've got Minnesota and Rutgers before they see Penn State. Who knows what that mess might be like in another couple of weeks.
No doubt about that.
All right. Well, Terry, I you touched on something that I wanted to hit you up with about these Division I teams playing the smaller teams. And, the Temple Owls and Matt Rhule, they continue to roll as they played an overmatched Delaware State team and put a 59-0 whipping on them, and it could have probably been 99-0 if they wanted to. And, the Owls are now ranked number 9 in the nation in points allowed themselves after three games. Now, their level of competition obviously hasn't been up there yet, but they're off to a great start. They've got back-to-back games looming, though, in late October at UCF and home versus East Carolina, and then 2 weeks later have Penn State. But the Owls are playing great football so far.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, these games, as per your question, they don't really get much out of it. We kind of talked about that before. But, Temple's a pretty solid football team. And, again, this is more of a stat filler, kind of a notch on their belt game. But, they've been really competitive, and that win at Vanderbilt was a big deal. And as you said, they're going to have a couple really difficult teams. East Carolina, I don't know if you guys caught the score this past week, but East Carolina's a really good football team. So that's going to be a heck of a game late in the season. And as you mentioned, they'll play UCF, who probably isn't, who we thought they were. But that'll be another competitive game. And, hey, look, Temple had two wins last year, and they're on the verge of, possibly, winning enough games to participate in a bowl game. And, hey, they might even do better than that. I mean, they have some really good pieces in place. The coaching staff's doing an excellent job. And I'm pretty excited for Temple. I think it's a really neat thing, and I'm looking forward to them not only playing East Carolina and UCF, but, as you mentioned, Penn State. that's going to be a fun game to watch. I mean, I think Temple will be fairly competitive in that game, and I think it'll be, you know, for a lot of the local fans, a lot of the Philadelphia-based fans that also love Penn State, I mean, that's going to be a fun ball game to, you know, to watch and be a part of.
Absolutely. Keith, I know you and you're a big follower of Matt Rhule. What do you think?
I think it's great. I mean, he's obviously an old teammate of mine and a friend of mine, and I love to see what he's doing down there. I got a couple friends on the staff down there. Fantastic job they're doing. Again, but, you know, back to what Terry said, it is Delaware State. You know, Delaware State's, I mean, they're playing the Temples of the world for a paycheck. I mean, they're trying to fund their program, and that's what, you know, was UMass came down here, left here with $1 million, and, you know, that's their football budget for the year. I mean, it's one of those, like, trickle-down effects. So, I am very, very interested in how Temple – I mean, I watch Temple every week whenever I can. Love Temple. I've always been a Temple fan. Got people there, friends from there. And, you know, I'm looking forward to that game when they come up here to see. That'll be a real test for them. A real test for them is going to be UCF and see where they stand with them. And then especially a really big test will be the East Carolina game. Don't put it past them. I really don't put it past Matt and his staff. I mean, they're the guys. They're the 180-hour a week guys. They're the guys that, like, you read stories about, and you're like, how do they do that? And it just drives me crazy that people can actually do that. And they're those guys. They're those guys going to work at leaving work at midnight, and they have a 5 a.m. meeting. It's like, why even go home? Just go sleep right in your office, in my opinion.
Absolutely. And as you know, as we talked about last week, my son's a college football coach, and he actually he worked with Coach Rhule and a couple of those guys, Coach Foley and a few of them at Temple, along with Al Golden back a few years ago. And you're absolutely right, man. Nothing, there's no rock left unturned with those guys from a preparation standpoint.
Crazy.
All right. Well, let's move on. Let's
talk like that, but it's true.
Oh, yeah. It's a crazy business. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on and talk about the Wildcats. The Villanova Wildcats, they played a formidable opponent for their level in James Madison. They win that game 49-31. They've moved up to number 5 in the nation this week. The Wildcats scored 35 second-half points in that game, led by quarterback John Robertson. That kid's playing lights out. He threw for another 337 yards, 4 touchdowns, and no interceptions. Obviously, I didn't get to see that game down here, but did you guys have a chance to see it? Was it on up there or anything like that, Keith?
No, it wasn't. I did not see the game at all, no.
Yeah, Bill, I didn't get a chance to watch it either. But, I mean, when you look at what they've done over the course of the season so far, I mean, this team's a pretty legitimate team. I mean, that Syracuse game was a clear indicator that they can play, obviously. And then you mentioned the offense. You know, look at, they're averaging big numbers across the board. You mentioned the quarterback. I would imagine that he'll show up in, you know, the Eagles, you know, preseason camp at some point. You know, being that he's in Villanova right now, but up to number 5, as you mentioned, they're a quality football team. And I think you know, along with you know, some of these powerhouses that we see at this level year in and year out, Villanova's going to have a chance come December. No question about it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. They've always done a good job there.
Well, it's a great.
I look over the last 10 or 15 or 20 years. I mean, Villanova is one of the top 10 programs in at that level. You know, I mean, they play for one national title with the Gordon kid, a quarterback from my high school. And, you know, and they're playing right now. It looks like they're going to have a chance to win that title this year. So.
Absolutely.
Not a bad place.
Absolutely. Yep, and obviously a great school to go to, and as you say, they always do a great job there. All right, well, hey, to our listeners, do you like shopping online? And if you do, we've got the place for you. You can do all your shopping from one location and get cash back on your purchases from over 3,000 stores. It's the South Beach Shopping Mall Without Walls, and it's simple to do. Go to www.south-beach-shopping.com and click on the top shop tab. From there, click sign in, register, and become a preferred customer. That's it. You're free to look around at all the products and click on the all stores tab and check out over 3,000 network stores by alphabet. All the big stores are there. It's a great opportunity to get cash back and even comparison shop. And best yet, it's free to register. If you have questions, click on the Contact Us tab on the homepage or click on your shop consultant, South Beach Shopping, to leave a message. All right, fellas. Well, let's take a look around the country, and we have to – I don't want to spend a whole lot of time talking about Jameis Winston and that debacle at Florida State, but they managed to squeak out an overtime win against Clemson. But Winston and Jimbo Fisher, in my mind, have a huge black eye. Winston handled himself terribly, and in my mind, Fisher handled himself equally as bad. And their football team managed to come out with an overtime win, and they're still ranked number one. Keith, what were your thoughts on that old mess?
Well, you say he made Florida State look bad and Jameis Winston look bad. I mean, I don't know, the first time I've seen Jameis Winston make a good impression on anybody. You know, it's always just been it's a trouble after trouble he's gotten into and never shows any remorse whatsoever. The whole debacle of him coming out in warm-ups with a full uniform on, doing the pregame routine, all that stuff, and then having to be told by Jimbo to go inside. I mean you got to tell you, there's something wrong there. Yeah, you can sit there and say, okay, that the managers did the locker rooms the night before, and then Florida State suspended them Friday night, but his locker had his uniform in there. So, I mean, come on. I mean, he's the head coach. He's got to know, you know. You're going to tell me that Jameis Winston's hiding in the back when they're doing their pregame prayers and getting their, you know, hey, quarterback's out first, you know. He's not going to notice the Heisman Trophy winner, you know, his 6'5" quarterback warming up. I mean, come on.
Surely, his position coach had to know, even if the head coach didn't.
I just think, what are they trying to say? Hey, we want you to get some work out there for, a nice practice, a nice 15-minute stretch, and then go in and take your uniform off? Come on. I mean, that's a joke. That's just spitting in the eye of your university, of the leadership of your university, saying, you know what, you're not going to tell me how to treat my players. I think was how that came off to me with Fisher.
Terry, what was your take?
Yeah, I mean, it was a very unfortunate situation. As Keith pointed out, it just seems like, you know, bad news seems to follow Jameis Winston wherever he goes, and it's really unfortunate because he's, you know, kind of one of the pillars of college football, being that he's a returning Heisman Trophy quarterback, and he's just immature. You know, a lot of people continue to make excuses for him. I heard Joey Galloway on ESPN the other day, ESPN Radio, talking with Paul Feibom, and he said that, what Jameis Winston did was typical of young people, you know, standing up and saying, you know, certain vulgar things, and that's he felt like that was normal and it wasn't that big of a deal. And I'm thinking to myself, I mean, Joey, you know, you just don't get it, brother. It's a horrible reflection on the university. It's a horrible reflection on Jameis Winston. It's a bad reflection on the team. He's letting everybody down by not being able to participate in one of the biggest games of the year. I mean, again, a Heisman Trophy winner, you know, comes back, and all these negative stories that follow him. And Jimbo Fisher, he's an enabler at this point. Everybody's enabling Jameis Winston to get away with whatever Jameis Winston wants to get away with. And, you know, if I'm a GM and I'm sitting there and I'm thinking about, you know, what I want to do in the draft, me personally, I'm not going to draft a guy like Jameis Winston, because you got a lot of guys in that locker room that you have to make sure that you're taking care of, and you don't want to have somebody that you have to baby, and you don't want to have somebody that you have to worry about day in and day out off the field. I mean, you got to be professional. You got to be professional about it. I know they're college kids, they're student athletes, but this is big business. You know, they are treated, you know, differently. Like I said, it's a big thing playing college athletics at a place like Florida State and all these schools that we're talking about. I just felt like it was really unfortunate. He let his team down. They were lucky enough, just, you know, Florida State's a very talented roster from top to bottom. The young quarterback, McGuire, played pretty well for the most part. He made some good throws. Obviously, he's a talented player. You don't go to Florida State if you're not a talented player, and he is. You know, the defense came up with some big plays, especially that last stand there on defense. And, you know, Clemson played pretty well for most of them. I mean, they looked a lot better in this game than they did against Georgia. You know, it's a couple games down the road, so you would expect that, but you know, they really got after Florida State, and Clemson should have won this game. They really should have. But Florida State moves on. They find a way to win. They still are one of the most talented teams in the country, no doubt about it. Jameis Winston will come back, and hopefully he'll right the ship and, you know, do some positive things from here on out. Again, as a college football fan, someone that, you know, watches this as closely as I possibly can, I just feel awful for Florida State, and, you know, that this guy's representing them at this point. And, you know, hopefully he'll turn it around and he'll – figure things out and be a little bit more professional about it. But it was a good win for Florida State. They got out of there. You know, Clemson has to kind of go back to the drawing board. But that young quarterback that they have, Watson, he's going to be a really good player for them. And, you know, good things are on the horizon for both programs. But, yeah, very unfortunate with Jameis Winston.
Well, two things I wanted to mention about this, and the first regarding Winston and the second regarding Fisher. You know, I listened to a bunch of different things because we were hanging around the hotel on Saturday morning before we left for the game, but the one guy that I thought made some really interesting comments was none other than Tim Tebow. And, you know, what Tebow said is, and it made perfectly good sense, is what Jameis Winston doesn't understand is the ability that he has and the leadership that he has, whether it's positive leadership or negative leadership, that that people follow him naturally. And that, you know, and Tebow's hope was that somebody, whoever that somebody is, gets a hold of this kid and says, son, here's what you have to do. You know, be a mentor to him and let him be in the draft, as you say, Terry, and have an opportunity to make a whole lot of money playing sports rather than, you know, whatever he might end up doing because he can't get his head on straight. And I thought that was really good by Tebow. In regards to Jimbo, I thought his post-game press conference was an embarrassment. And I thought he was trying to get the listeners to believe that it was all good, it was all okay. It wasn't okay, Jimbo, and you're the man. You're the point man. And your quarterback is trying to make himself bigger than your program. And, you know, right after the game, he congratulated the McGuire kid on playing a nice game. And by the way, Jameis Winston's our quarterback come Monday morning. You know, I just thought he handled it all completely wrong himself. And I really think it gave a black eye to him and to the program.
Yeah, and I guess in Jimbo's defense, if there's a defense, I mean – you know, as coaches, and we've all been in that industry and, you know, been involved with young people, it's, you know, you could easily kind of get wrapped up in that relationship and, you know, very defensive about certain things. And you care about these young people. You really do. And you want them to do well. And when they make mistakes, a lot of times it's like, you know, they're your children. And, you know, you deal with it in the moment and you try to protect them as much as you can. And, you know, unfortunately, with someone like Jameis, he just continues to make mistakes and continues to make mistakes. And like you said, I mean, or what Tebow said, I mean, it's so true. I mean, someone's really going to have to get their hands on him and just wake him up and say, you literally have the world at your fingertips, Jameis. You can do anything. The guy is so talented. There's no question about that. But, you know, he's got to prepare. He's got to be professional. And he most certainly has to, you know, approach things differently. And, you know, it's a shame. It really is. Hopefully he'll, you know, figure things out and maybe this is, you know, a learned lesson and he moves on.
Keith, any closing comments on that?
Yeah, well, you know, I remember last year when his father, after the crab leg incident, said that he put the onus on Florida State to have somebody watching after his son and doing this and doing that. And I sat back and said, why in the hell should Florida State have to supply this? You know, I mean, if it's your son, if I had done something like that, my father would have jacked me up against the wall and said, you know, you're ruining your life right now, son. I mean, maybe he's never done that in his life. I don't know if he's ever been told no, but there's somebody has to be there to tell this kid, you are ruining your future right now with this attitude you have, that you're bigger than the program. No one is ever going to be bigger than any college football program. Tim Tebow is as close to Jesus Christ as you get in the history of college football in some people's eyes, but he was never bigger than the Florida football program. You know, Joe Paterno up here, Bobby Bowden down at Florida State. They were never bigger than the football program. I mean, it was just, it's what it is. And, you know, who am I comparing him to? I'm probably comparing him to Christian Hackenberg, who was the same age. Actually, Jameis is a year older than Hackenberg.
Yep.
I live a mile and a half from Beaver Stadium. I get to see a 19-year-old kid go out there and lead 120 guys in the football program and do it with a lot of class and do it with a lot of this and that. And, you know, and then I come home from the game and I'm watching this on TV and they're showing highlights of him warming up and then showing him on the bench laughing and joking. And I'm like, what's wrong with this picture? There's something wrong here, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, you hate to go all the way into this detail, I guess, but it really comes down to who are the kids that you're recruiting? Who are the kids that you want to represent your program?
You know, you look at Hackenberg and you look at, you know, the he looks the part of an All-American kid, as did Tebow. You look at a guy like Jameis with the hat on sideways and, you know, needing somebody to watch over his kid. It's just a different environment, and, you know, it doesn't always work out that way, but I think it's pretty clear in this kind of case.
Yeah, with Joey Galloway saying that all these kids do this and do that, it's true. They live in a whole different world than I lived in when I was playing football here, because we did all the stupid, crazy stuff like that. But he has to realize, like, you know, Joe always used to say, you live in a glass house. You guys live in a glass house. That cat lives in a magnified glass house. He is the Heisman Trophy winner. There's a different stigma attached to that. He's held to a different in a different light than the other players, because one, he is the quarterback of Florida State, and two, he's returning Heisman. He's the youngest Heisman Trophy winner in the history of the award. You know, as they always say, you know, there's however many Heisman Trophy winners, but the rest of his life, when he is introduced, it's going to say that 2013 Heisman Trophy winner, Jameis Winston. No matter what he does, where he goes, the rest of his life, he will be introduced as that. He is going to be held to a higher standard than other guys.
Well, and I can tell you, I was with a Heisman Trophy winner all weekend, and he's not too happy about how the whole thing's playing out and how that trophy's being represented right now. I can tell you that. Jameis makes the stuff that Johnny Manziel was doing look like school kid stuff. I mean, Johnny was just out partying, having a good time in places that you know, people didn't expect him to be, but he wasn't involved with the cops.
Yep.
That's true.
Well, Terry, let's talk about Mississippi State. I thought that was a good game that needed to be talked about, because they rolled into LSU, and they put it on the Tigers from start to finish. LSU made it close in the end, but that game belonged to Mississippi State from the opening gun. What was your take on that?
Absolutely. First and foremost, LSU is probably one of the hardest places to play a football game, especially at night. I believe that's only the second loss in the last 40 games that they've had at night in that stadium. Mississippi State is legit. They are very good on their front seven. They're very physical. They were much more physical in this game than LSU, as you said. And Dak Prescott, if any of the listeners, if anybody hasn't seen this kid play, he's a legitimate contender for the Heisman. He's going to most certainly propel this team to, you know, potentially an SEC. They're going to be competitive with Alabama and some of these teams. I mean, he had over 370 yards of offense. They rolled up over 300 yards rushing on LSU, at LSU. I mean, that stadium was empty. There was literally like 8,000 people there at the very end when they made their comeback. But they were just so physical on both sides of the ball. And LSU, look, granted, they were struggling. They're going to have to, you know, get the younger kid in there, quarterback. Harris is going to have to step in now. But Mississippi State, this is a game-changing, you know, victory for this program. And I think it's going to propel this to some great things this year. The only thing I worry about, and I think we're going to get into this later, is will this be the last year that Dan Mullins is at Mississippi State? He might be headed down south. He might be headed down to his old stomping grounds in Florida, but I guess we'll talk about that later. But Mississippi State's a really good football team. Both sides of the ball, they run the ball. They have a dynamic quarterback. This is going to be a team, most certainly, that's going to compete with Alabama. And look, LSU's behind the eight ball now. So Mississippi State's kind of in the driver's seat there. And, you know, that game against Alabama is going to be a big game when it comes up here later in the season.
Yeah, I was able to watch that with one eye most of the night. We were in the press box. We had four different games on besides the one we were live at. And, man, right from the beginning, it just seemed like Mississippi State got after them. And I was really surprised that they played such good defense. They're a good ball club, as you mentioned. Keith, did you get a chance to see that game?
You know, I caught bits and pieces of it. I mean, we got home, you know, 10 o'clock from the game here and threw some stuff on, and the tailgate we had a couple TVs going, but other games we were watching. But, you know, I'll back you up there. I've never been to LSU. It's one of those one places I do want to go. But that is a very tough place to play from what I hear from everybody I've ever talked to. Saturday night, and then to go on the road and to be able to do that to LSU's defense, it's just very impressive. I mean, having watched LSU wear down Wisconsin, you know, and just, it was Wisconsin. They beat Wisconsin, right? Was that Georgia? Holy Hicks.
LSU did beat Wisconsin. Yep.
Yeah, LSU beat Wisconsin. Yeah, when they wore Wisconsin down in the fourth quarter, which I never thought would happen. But they wore Wisconsin down in the fourth quarter. And that being, and when you say it's a program changer, I think it really is. I mean, Mississippi State's always put on that cusp. Are they going to be great? Are they ever going to cross over and be a great team? And because they're always there. They're always like that one team trying to kick the door in, like, you know, I mean, it reminded me of a Northwestern in the Big Ten, you know, like they were downtrodden for so many years, and they had a couple of years there they were great. They've always just been on a tier below, like a Michigan State, you know. You never think of Michigan State as that dominant Big Ten team. But now that they're on top of it, I think that Mississippi State won in that game. That is a program changer. So, I mean, we'll see. I mean, will Mullins go back to Florida? Who knows?
Hey, and speaking of LSU, I had the opportunity to go there last year. You know, I told you we take an annual trip this week. You know, we went to Morgantown. Last week we went to Baton Rouge and saw Auburn and LSU, and LSU won that game. But it is a pretty crazy place, no doubt about it. It was a fun place to go. It was a night game, and LSU won. So it is cool.
A lot of Mason's jars down there.
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. Down there, they got a whole different brand of it.
Hey, yeah. Keith, I have a picture of Bill in a cage with a tiger. It's a pretty cool pic.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I do have that picture, yes. Well, hey, let's move on, because I wanted to talk about this. Several weeks ago, we talked about Brady Hoke in the hot seat at Michigan, and that didn't get any better for him losing to Utah this week. And down in my neck of the woods here, the seat is starting to get very hot for Florida's Will Muschamp and our friend at Miami, Al Golden. Florida lost handily to Alabama. Miami had no answers for Nebraska's running game. You know, the Gators are 2-1. They have, in their next four, they're at Tennessee. They play LSU, Missouri, and Georgia. They could lose three out of those four. The Hurricanes are 2-2. They can't seem to get a quality win against anybody. They've got Duke at Georgia Tech, Cincinnati, and at Virginia Tech in their next four. They're 66th in the nation in points allowed, which, you know, they've given up 72 points against the two quality opponents in Nebraska and Louisville. That's just not going to get it done. And Michigan, you know, they're 2-2. And their next four are Minnesota, at Rutgers, Penn State, and at Michigan State. They could lose three of those games. So what's your thoughts on these guys? Let's start out, Terry, with you, and let's talk about Michigan first.
Okay. Yeah, Michigan. So as we mentioned, you know, at the beginning of the series here, yeah, Brady Hoke was definitely on the hot seat going in. Nothing has changed. They've actually been, you know, really, really bad, you know, the first 4 weeks of the season. And that game against Utah, look, Utah is a physical team. They play well in all three phases. You know, they do have some dynamic playmakers, but you can't lose to Utah at home in that game. And it's another, you know, shot, you know, across the bow against the Big Ten. And, you know, Brady Hoke just, it seems like he's losing the team, you know, at this point. He just doesn't seem like the players are responding. And to be honest with you, it's not for a lack of personnel. You know, I know the offensive line's really struggled the last couple of years, but, I mean, look, Michigan's recruited very well the last 4 or 5 years. It's not because they don't have, you know, the necessary talent to be better than what they are right now. Brady Hoke and his staff, they're just not doing a good job of coaching these guys up. It's simply put. It really comes down on Brady Hoke and what he's doing. You know, it was very promising initially, that very first season out, but, you know, as they've gone on and he's been able to kind of get his own guys in there and he's been trying to coach these guys up, we just haven't really seen the progress that you want to see. And like you said, these next four games, I mean, this could be it. This could be it. If they struggle and lose two or three of those games, no question, Brady Hoke might not make it through the end of the season. And, you know, that'll be a good thing for Penn State. Like you said, they got to play Rutgers and Minnesota. They might be pretty nicked up going into that game because Rutgers, as we saw, is a pretty physical team. So, you know, I'm curious to see what you guys have to say, but Brady Hoke, in my mind, this is going to be the last year. I'll say this. I think Harbaugh will be the head coach for Michigan next year. I'll go as far as to say that.
Well, yeah,
it's setting up pretty good right there for Jimmy Harbaugh coming back to Michigan. You know, it seems like he's losing that team out in San Francisco. I mean, there's a lot of dissension going on out there. Just the 49ers are not playing disciplined football, and that goes back to one person. It always goes back to the head coach. So, and you know, there are rumors that Jim has lost the locker room in San Francisco. So, it's a perfect fit, working out perfect for them right now. And, you know, it'd be a pretty substantial kick in the butt for Michigan and the Big Ten if Jim Harbaugh would come back to the Midwest and coach the alma mater. You know, you never want to see it. In Michigan, you want your Big Cats doing well, but, I mean, you can't lose a game to Utah. I mean, it's Utah. I mean, you're Michigan, and you're getting beat up front. I mean, you know, there's something has to change at that point when, you know, we said, you know, the Big Ten is struggling this year, but the Big Ten went 12-1 this week with one loss, and that was Michigan losing to Utah. You know, they're not beating the top-tier SEC teams, but, you know, there are some pretty good victories by 12 of the 13 teams, and then them just getting humiliated by Utah. That's embarrassing for the Big Ten and for Brady Hoke. They had a lot of promise when he came back, him being a Michigan guy, a Michigan man, she'll always coach Michigan, and we're going to get back to being Michigan, and, you know, it's not working out for them right now.
Yeah, and I think they've got, you know, Devin Gardner just makes bad decisions at the quarterback position. They have their own offensive line problems, but, you know, they're averaging 5.6 yards a carry as a team so far, but they've thrown 6 interceptions already, and he just seems to not make wise plays, and it always seems to hurt them. As we talked about a couple weeks ago in that Notre Dame game where they got blown out, I think their defense only gave up like 281 yards, if I remember right, and they lost by 30-some points. You know, it's just it's tough to do when you have an offense that's doing just absolutely nothing. Well, let's talk about the Gators. You know, they're 2-1. They lost to Bama 42-21. They've got their hands full here in the next 4 weeks. They could be 3-4 easily here in the next month. What do you think about that, Keith?
You know, the same thing. I mean, there's a guy who, you know, showed a lot of promise when he first got there, but what has he really produced any lately? I just don't see it happening. I mean, they held up there with Alabama for a little bit, but then Alabama just run them off the field. And, you know, as a Gator fans cannot be happy about that whatsoever. They're the games that you should be going into winning at least every other year, if not more, and now they're just going into big games and getting humiliated. So it's a very fickle fan base, as you well know, down there in Florida. They like their winners, they like their stars, and I don't see Muschamp lasting past this year.
Jerry, what do you think?
Yeah, I have to agree with Keith. I think Muschamp, I think this is his last year down in Florida. I mean, he most certainly, you know, did start out with a little bit of promise. And look, there's probably 120 coaches that would trade rosters with him right now. Florida is talented. They are loaded on both sides of the ball. Their problem the last 4 or 5 years has been the quarterback position. Their defense is as talented as anyone. They you know, it was 21-21 with Alabama there in the third quarter. But offensively, you know, they've just really struggled. I mean, they've had such poor play, you know, really since Tebow left, and they just haven't been able to figure it out. And, hey, you know, sometimes it comes down to that position, especially for a team like that that's loaded everywhere else. So I don't with the schedule that they have, can they win those games? They're talented enough to win those games, which is crazy, but I think they will end up losing at least two of those games. Tennessee is going to be a tough game. So I'm with Keith on this one. I think Muschamp doesn't make it through, and I think you see Dan Mullins down in Florida next year.
Fair. How about this real quick? Now, we're talking about quarterback play, how it can change your team in this net. What's Penn State's record without Christian Hackenberg this year?
Oh,
you know,
They're easily 2-2 for sure. I mean, that Akron game was
pretty
difficult.
Without question, 2-2, possibly 1-3.
Yeah, I would agree.
We're talking about coaches here who are on the hot seats and back-to-back, boom, boom, right there. You got Michigan with a starting quarterback and Florida with a starting quarterback because they have all this talent around, and it's just such a pivotal position at the college level. It's just unbelievable. You could say the NFL is very pivotal as a quarterback, but more so in college.
Yeah, well, you know, when Jeff Driskel came into Miami as a 5-star recruit, he was the pick of that class, and just I don't know how many offensive coordinators he's been through. I want to say 4, certainly 3, possibly 4 in his career, and it's just never all come together for the kid.
Yeah, no, it's a good point, Bill. And this is actually the offensive coordinator that best suits his skill set. When he came out of high school, he was a dual threat quarterback. And, you know, Kurt Roper, that's what he does. I mean, he implements the run game. And Driscoll's a very athletic guy. He just does not process information very well. The kid has a live arm. I mean, he can make the throws. It just seems like when he gets in the middle of things, his eyes usually drift down. You see him right away. His eyes drift down. He looks at the rush. You know, he just doesn't focus downfield. He just doesn't process information as well as you need to at that position. And, you know, unfortunately, it's just, you know, he's made a lot of bad decisions. So I feel bad for Muschamp because, you know, he's a heck of a coach, but it just doesn't seem to be quite working out there in Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about our friend Al Golden down at Miami. And I've got a stat for you guys. Well, first of all, we'll say this. They beat Florida A&M and they beat Arkansas State. They got blown out by Louisville, and they got beat, I'll say, handily by Nebraska. So they're beating the bads, and they're not doing too well against the goods. But let me throw this stat at you. From 1991 to 2010, Miami allowed zero teams to rush for over 300 yards in a game. Okay, that's nearly 20 years. Since Al's been there in his 4 years, they have allowed six times for teams to rush over 300 yards.
Wow.
What are your thoughts, Terry? Is Al in trouble down there?
You know, I hate to say it because I know we have some big Al Golden fans here, and I like Al too. I think Al's a tremendous coach. I think Al probably should have jumped ship a couple years ago. He had a chance at the Tennessee job, and you and I talked about this off air. And obviously the Penn State situation, you know, his name was in the mix, and that would have been obviously a really good fit for him. You know, I just don't think Miami's the job that it used to be, I think for a number of reasons, as, you know, you and I have discussed many times. You know, the resources, the facilities, you know, there's really been this very adamant move towards, you know, the academics being really a focus, which is great. I mean, it's a great academic institution, and that actually benefits your football program if you handle it properly. And I think Al Golden, everybody that's ever been around him always says that he's so organized. He does such a good job of running a program. But I think they're just having a difficult time getting the kind of guys that they need in there to kind of turn the corner. And another situation as it pertains to the quarterback, you know, this is a perfect one. They've really struggled at that position, absolutely struggled at quarterback. And, again, they have a young quarterback in there this year. It's a job killer. It's an absolute job killer if you can't find the right guy to run the system. So I'll shut up and let you guys talk about it. But that fan base down there is getting a little riled up. I don't know if Al's going to – he's a great coach, and I know that it sounds like the administration really enjoys him. But, you know, enough might be enough, and he might be headed somewhere else here very soon.
Keith, what are you thinking?
You know, I'm in the same boat with, you know, Al being a teammate of mine and a friend of mine, as well. We're talking about Matt Rhule. You know, you don't want to see this go bad, but in my personal opinion, I think that the fan base turned on him. What's his name? I mean, let's not kid ourselves. Miami fans don't like Penn State, never have liked Penn State, never will like Penn State. You know, it goes back to a certain game in 1987. It is what it is, but you know, so them having a Penn State guy, you know, a lot of the alumni don't like Al, and it seems to me that the players have turned on him a little bit. They don't like D'Onofrio, a defensive coordinator. They don't like Al because they're both Penn State guys and this and that. And then, you know, Al and Mark D'Onofrio are great friends. He's not going to get rid of his friend, the D coordinator. Trust me, Al would get rid of – if Mark wasn't doing his job, he'd get rid of him. That's a guarantee, and he's not going to hang on them because they're best friends. There's no doubt. But that fan base is turned on them, in my opinion, and I think it's trickled down to the players right now. And, you know, they should not be. I mean, again, if you watch the Nebraska game, I did watch the Nebraska game, it looked like the Miami of, like, 92, 93. It was, you know, cheap shot after cheap shot, trying to start fights after plays. I mean, Nebraska is one of the easiest places, a hard place to play, but their fans are very appreciative of a game. And I saw, I don't know who said it, but they said it's the first time they've ever seen a Nebraska crowd boo an opposing team when they left the field.
Wow.
You know, I've heard stories. I've never been to Nebraska. I've heard people that played there tell me, they say, you walk off the field, you think you won the game the way they're cheering for you. They're saying, hey, thank you for only getting, you know, thank you, thank you, thank you. And I heard that it was the first time they had ever heard a Nebraska fan base boo an opposing team, and that was that Miami team. I watched it that game. It was bad. It looked bad. It made Al look bad. It made Miami look like the Miami of old, and I can't believe the administration at Miami is going to deal with that much longer.
Yeah, I agree. And that, you know, I think I do think Al is probably safe, but I do think he may be pushed into a corner to make a decision here on Mark, and it's probably not going to be a popular one for him to have to make, because I think they're going to push him into a corner. The big thing that I hear all the time down this way is, you know, why is our defensive line not as good as Jerome Brown and Warren Sapp, and those guys are Hall of Famers. They're not on every street corner. You know, you can't recruit those kids every day because they don't exist. And there's a lot of it reminds me back when I was in, I'm giving away my age here, when I was younger, where they everybody expected UCLA to just keep winning when John Wooden left. Well, you know what? That I think they still think that. And it just doesn't happen that way. And you just don't get Bill Walton's and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's, as you don't keep getting players like Toretta and Testaverde and Sapp and Brown, and the list goes on and on. I mean, they have Hall of Famers everywhere. It's just tough to do. And I think they're in trouble down there. I really do. I hate to say it, but I think he's on a short rope.
Better be good.
All right,
well,
let's take a look at our picks from last week, see how we did, and we'll make this week's picks. And, Terry, I hate to say it, but you just dominated this again, Keith. I don't know what we're going to do with him. He keeps running off perfect weeks.
He's playing this 1AA competition, so let's not give him all this love here. You know, he's 2-2 with going 7-7. He's playing against inferior competition.
Well, you know, you and I both, Keith, went out on a limb, and we took Kansas State as who were underdogs against Auburn. We both took Kansas State at home on Thursday night, and we lost that game. And we also went maybe with our heart a little bit when we both took Navy against Rutgers, and Terry took Rutgers. So those were our two losses. Terry won those. He won with Penn State, Temple, Villanova, Florida State, and Oklahoma, as did us all. So Terry goes 7-0 for a week. Keith 5-2. Bill's 5-2. So for the year to date, Terry is 17-6. I have to put him first since he had two perfect weeks. So he's first. I'm tied for first at 17-6, and Keith, you're two games behind us. So real quick, let's make our picks for this week, and because we're running out of time. So Northwestern at Penn State. Keith, Penn State.
Penn State.
Terry.
We are Penn State.
All right. Temple at UConn. Keith?
I got to go with my Owls. I'll go first. Yeah, Temple Owls.
Okay.
I'll go with Temple as well.
All right. How about the Villanova Wildcats at the Penn Quakers at Franklin Field? That'd be good if they were playing that at the Palestra.
That would be a good game.
Agree. Villanova Biggies.
Yep, I'll take Villanova as well.
I agree. All right. How about a Thursday night matchup? I like this game. Number 11 UCLA at number 15 Arizona State.
Absolutely.
UCLA's played with fire all year. I'm going to go with Arizona State with somewhat of an upset.
Yep, I'm going to go with Arizona State as well. It could be the battle of backup quarterbacks. We'll see if Hundley gets in there, but Arizona State's Kelly's definitely out, so they'll have to do it with a backup quarterback, but I'll go Arizona State.
Well, I was going to go Arizona State, but we can't all pick the same guy, so I'm going to take UCLA because I was a little torn on that one. So I'll take UCLA just so we have a difference. Remember that late in the year if I need it, all right? All right, Minnesota at Michigan.
Golden Gophers.
Yeah, I'm gonna go Michigan, Bill. I'm going to take Michigan to play well enough to get a victory.
I am going to take Michigan as well, only because I think this is absolutely the season for them. They have to win.
Plus, you're a I'm a Pepsi guy, so I won't get two Cokes for a free ticket to the Michigan game this weekend. Do you guys see that, by the way?
Yeah, how about that?
Unbelievable.
All right, how about our last one? Missouri at number 13, South Carolina.
I'm going to go South Carolina.
I'm going to go South Carolina as well.
Me too. All right. Well, that brings us up close to the top of the hour. We'd like to thank our sponsor, www.southbeachshopping.com, as well as my partners, Terry House and the Goon, Keith Conlon, for their great insights.
We'd like to remind our listeners that we will be back next Tuesday night, September 30th at 7 p.m., to talk about Week 4 as well as the upcoming week. You can listen to our podcast at any time at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio. Thanks for joining us. We hope you enjoyed the show.